Thanks for downloading the podcast. And the name of the show is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. At our ministry, our goal is to help you rid yourself of all of your debt, no matter how small or no matter how large your debt may be. Check out our 9-week small group Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. You'll find the information at compasscatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and leading our discussion today are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. So, John, today's topic is five ways or five recommendations or five tips that will give you a raise.
Unless you're making money hand over fist, you probably feel like your spending plan totally exceeds your income.
So in other words, there's too much month left at the end of the money, right?
Yeah, that's about the way it works out a lot of times. And, you know, sometimes it seems like maybe even the bare necessities are out of reach. And, you know, saving for an emergency fund is just impossible. That's not going to happen. And God forbid somebody gets sick or hurt, needs medical care, has an accident, whatever. You know, when you get these bills that are totally out of the norm.
Because the car dies or the roof needs repaired or the washer dries or the refrigerator needs repaired. That kind of stuff always happens.
It happens.
Always throws you off kilter.
If you got little kids, somebody gets sick, they break an arm or whatever, you know, it's just, so it can really wreak havoc with your spending plan. So today we want to look at several ideas that might help you work on your spending plan and maybe even without reducing what you're already buying. Maybe there's a way that you can buy better or
smarter.
That's right. So before we begin to look at your expenses, though, let's take a look at your income. How do you feel about getting a $200 or $300 or a $500 raise a month without having to go out and look for a new job?
I think everybody would agree.
It sounds like a great idea, right?
Excellent idea.
Let's take a look at your income taxes. You've had about a year to kind of see what happens with your income taxes and how much income you're getting in your paycheck, that kind of thing. And now you're working on your taxes. You're trying to figure out how much you're going to get back. You know, I saw a news article the other day, and it said that the average tax return was 8% smaller than last year. During the same period of time.
Which makes it sound like a bad thing.
They portrayed it as this was horrendous and, you know, it's all the government's fault and, you know, they'll blame it on anybody they can blame it on. I'm not going to get into politics here. But the fact of the matter is that almost everybody has seen their pay increase because of the changes in the tax laws. And so what you used to get at the end of the year, some of that you've been getting every month in your paycheck.
Well, that sounds like a better deal anyway, because that gives you more spendable income throughout the course of the year instead of getting this big thing at the end of the year that you used to pay off the bills you accumulated because you didn't make enough money every month.
But the magic question is, how did you handle that increase in net income that you received every month? What did you do with it?
I'm going to guess that a large percentage of people took it as a bonus and just bought stuff.
They blew it.
Okay, let's phrase it that way.
Yeah.
They blew it.
Yeah.
That's just my guess.
Yeah. And I think you're probably right. Did they change their spending plan and apply the increase to any specific categories? Probably not. Did they apply it towards debt repayment? Probably not. So they just...
It just kind of got absorbed into the general chaos of spending money, and there was no thought process to it, which is the problem with a lot of people when they don't have a spending plan. The money comes in, the money goes out, and they don't know where it went.
Exactly. How much money are you going to get back on your taxes? I know you might not know yet, but you will know in the next several weeks. So let's think about it for a little bit. If you're going to get back, let's say, $1,200 on your tax return. You know, if you calculated your W-4 correctly, which is the document that you fill out, the worksheet, W-4 worksheet, you fill it out to claim your exemptions for the coming year. If you filled it out correctly, you know, your tax return that you get back would be zero. I mean, that's in a perfect scene, okay? I know it's nothing's perfect in this world. But if you're getting back $1,200, if you tweaked that W-4 form, you could put another $100 in your monthly income.
Because what you want to do at the end of the year is be tax neutral.
You want to be, yeah, you have net zero.
You don't want to owe anything, but you don't want to get anything, and you don't really want to get a lot back, because
exactly.
That means you've loaned the government your money.
At no interest
throughout the course of the year.
Exactly.
Which really doesn't benefit you personally at all.
No. But if you want to make a loan to me under those conditions, I'll take it.
I don't think so.
And I wonder how many people actually look at their W-4 form. If they just don't fill it out and put down, if they have two kids, they write down two themselves, their wife. But you can have 9, 10.
We were always in double digits.
And that's what we did. And I would look every quarter and I would make adjustments on my W-4. Just mm-hmm. go to HR, need a new form, change the exemption, because I tracked on how much we would be getting back or how much we would owe at the end of the year, and try to get as close to zero as possible.
See, I think that's out of sight, out of mind. You fill out the W-4, you start working, and that's it. You just don't ever think about it
again. I had to put reminders in my calendar. It mm-hmm. wasn't something that I thought about the start of a new quarter. I had a reminder in my calendar.
You know, there's been a couple of couples that we've worked with over the years, and that's one of the first things you have them do is to look at their W-4 and recalculate the amount of exemptions they have. So
you
that
know,
they
most
can...
people like to get $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 back. That is just a total waste of money.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's not a waste. They're not really wasting the money. They're wasting the use of the money.
And the interest that you, well, the small interest you could have earned because now the government made all that extra money.
Or the interest you're paying because you had to pay credit card debt over that period of time because you didn't have enough money to make ends meet on the stuff you wanted or needed.
If you're getting back $5,000 or $6,000, that's $500 a month that you could put in your, you know, in your pocket to pay off debt. How much debt could you pay off with an extra $500 a month?
I bet you could pay off $500 a month.
Wow. Or start a retirement plan.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you could do with that extra money. So you can get the W-4 form from your HR department or the IRS.
You can Google it. Just Google W-4 form, and you know, it'll pop right up, and you print it out and fill it out and take it into your HR department. They are required to implement whatever you put on that W-4 mm-hmm. into your pay system. That's a great way to go. There's no absolutes. You got to be careful if you go from 6 exemptions and you're getting $3,000 back and you make it 20 exemptions, guess what?
You might owe something.
You're going to probably have to pay taxes. So you don't want to be goofy about it either, okay?
But is the W-4 form, does it show you the calculation? So it shows you how much
it's
it impacts
Yeah, it's a worksheet. It takes you through
back.
The process.
Okay.
You know, if you get this many exemptions, you multiply it by this factor and you do this and then you do that and boom. You've got a number.
Here's the magic number.
Yeah, bada bing. Here's your number. Okay. So we've taken a look at your income, and that maybe is the place where you can get the most money back. But let's take a look at your spending and see if there's some areas where you might be spending too much money. And the first one is car insurance. Nobody really likes shopping for car insurance. And so as soon as you get a policy, you just kind of let it ride unless the company sends you a notice that they're going to cancel. And
it's like
some companies do that on a regular basis, whether you've a good driver or not. But
so it's another out of sight, out of mind, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I was reading an article on a Penny Hoarder recently, and it talked about a program or an app called Gabby, G-A-B-I. Now, I don't know anything about this company other than what I read, but what I read was really very interesting. What Gabby does is they'll do the shopping for you, so you don't have to do it. So you go into this app, you put in your insurance policy number, and you provide your driver's license, and then Gabby will take that information, they'll go into the insurance files in the sky someplace, and they'll see what kind of coverage you got, and then they will query, you know, the top 20 companies to see if they can't get you a reduction in your insurance payments. And The interesting thing is that they're finding an average of $720 savings per year.
That's a lot when you add it up over
$60 a month. Every little bit helps. And the great thing about it is that they're making an apples to apples comparison.
So, John, I think that's a good point, because a lot of times we just take the bills that come in and pay them. We don't even think about it. We don't review them. And we always recommend that people look at all of their income and their outgo every year and just see what needs to be adjusted. And every time we've done that, we've made some adjustments.
Oh, there's no question about it. And, you know, what the insurance companies will do, and even the quote unquote, really good insurance companies, they'll give you a good, maybe a lowball rate the first year. And then the next time your payments are due, it'll go up a little bit. Or at the end of the year, it'll go up a little bit. And then the next year, it'll go up a little bit more. And the next year, it'll go up a little bit more. Every year, if you're not looking at that and you let it go for 5 years, you're probably losing anywhere from $500 to $1,000 a year.
So how often do you recommend individuals or couples go see their insurance agents and reevaluate the homeowners, the car insurance, to see if there's any way to lower the cost without lowering the coverage?
Anytime you've got a new vehicle, you know, absolutely need to go through that. Otherwise, I'd do it maybe every couple of years.
You think that long? I would do it every year.
But the big bill, I think a lot of people, and we haven't discussed it here today, and we only have a few seconds left, the cable bill, that seems to go up and up and up. And if you're looking to cut somewhere,
well, yeah,
you did this.
We did it. We no longer have cable. You know, we saved ourselves, I don't know, $50 to $75 a month. And we're getting everything we want to watch, so.
It's a limited amount of stuff we want to watch anymore.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries, and we've been sharing some resources with you today, and we'll continue to share those for the rest of the show in the form of apps and websites that will help you manage the family budget. And we're going to post all of these resources in our blog on our website. The blog is called 5 Ways to Give Yourself a Raise, and you'll find that information at compasscatholic.org. So, John, can you give us another tip that would, put some more money in my paycheck?
Well, let's talk about your credit score and your credit report. You know, your credit score is based on the information that's on your credit report. And based on various studies, it's been found that 20 to 40% of the credit reports have inaccurate information.
And that information could lower your credit score, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if your score is lowered, it doesn't matter whether it was good information or bad information. It is what it is. Your credit score, instead of being 650, is 500.
Not good.
Not good. Exactly. Exactly. So you're going to, with the credit score, is going to determine the amount of interest that you pay on loans for cars, for houses. It's even going to affect your ability to rent an apartment, if that's one of the things that you're trying to do.
Well, don't employers often check your credit score too?
Yes, you might even be turned down from a job if your credit score is really bad. And it's really important to know what information is on your credit reports.
So how do you get a copy of it?
Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. There is a website. It's called freecreditreport.com. And that'll be in the blog, so you can look that up. freecreditreport.com. And you can order a copy of your credit report. You can only get one copy per year from the three companies that deal with credit reports. Those companies are TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. So here's what you want to do. Download it from one company and check it out. And then from whichever company you download it from, you find bad information, you know, dispute it, go to their website, dispute it on their forms. There's a whole process there.
But that's important that you follow the process they have set up in order to report disputes.
Yeah, yeah. Don't just start complaining without following the process. And do that for each company. do one company every 4 months. So over the course of the next 12 months, you will have received all three credit reports, one from each company, and you've got 4 months basically to, dispute the information that's there. There's also a different way to do it. With this great thing called the internet, there's a company out there called Credit Sesame. And again, it's a company I've read about. I've not had any dealings with them, so I have no personal experience. I'm just telling you what the company does, and I like it based on the descriptions that I understand. It's free. I always like free. They will give you a credit report card.
So it's not an official credit score.
That's right. It's a credit report card, and it's going to break down everything that's on your credit report, and they're going to do it in layman's terms. And the good thing about it is they're even going to tell you how to fix the issues that they think are issues. At least, let's call them potential issues. It may be correct information. You're the only person who can determine that. If you want to know more about how credit reports work and how credit scores work, we did a blog not too long ago called Credit Scores and Real Life. And I think we'll reference that in our blog for this show, and then you can go take a look at it.
Aren't there some banks and credit card companies which also offer free credit score reports and free credit scores and free credit reports?
Yes, I skipped over that. I'm sorry. Most banks today and almost all credit cards give you the option of following not only your credit report, but your credit score, which if you go to the three companies, they're going to make you pay for it, but everybody else will give it to you for free. So that's a good point, Evelyn. Thank you very much. Another thing that you might be paying for and paying way too much money is life insurance. Another one of those great topics. Everybody wants to go life insurance shopping. I know. You just can't wait.
But you're not saying not to have life insurance.
Oh, no. Most people need life insurance. Now, there's a time in your life when you don't need it, but we're not ready to talk about that right now. If you're buying life insurance, the chances are that most of you are paying way too much money. And even worse, you're paying way too much money for way too little coverage. A suggested coverage for your insurance is 10 times your annual salary. But in many cases, you should actually have as much as 20 times your average salary. And, if you're already paying too much for insurance, buying that amount of coverage, if you're making $60,000 a year, what does that say? You need $600,000 to $1.2 million worth of life insurance. And if you've got whole life or universal life or variable life or any of those kinds of policies that bundle insurance along with investment or savings vehicles, there's no way that an average family could afford to pay and get the right amount of coverage.
So what do you say to a young family, a young couple with a baby who want to get life insurance for the infant?
On the infant's life?
Yeah, we've had that several times over the last, as long as we've been
coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, we always say don't.
Yeah.
Well, don't, or if you really feel a need to, because maybe you've had experience in the past with the child dying, mm-hmm. you might want to just get enough to cover a funeral. I mean, and that's minimal. I mean, compared to what a breadwinner earns.
And that's what we want to make sure is that if they're insufficiently funded with life insurance, the breadwinner,
yes,
to use that money to beef up what they currently have, if they have any at all.
Yeah. That's much more important, because the real purpose of life insurance is just to pay off outstanding debts and to provide your loved ones with a source of income if the breadwinner were to die. And that accounts for husband and wife, because even if one of the spouses isn't working, they're contributing to the family income. Let's say the kids are not in daycare, but if one of the spouses is gone, the remaining spouse would have to put the kids in daycare. So that's a huge increase to the monthly budget.
Daycare and babysitting and all that kind of stuff is really can add up to an awful lot of money. So the main reason to have life insurance is to provide income for the remaining family if the person who had insurance is no longer around. There's a sound strategy for buying insurance, and that is to buy term insurance. And term insurance is probably, well, there's no doubt about it. Term insurance is the cheapest way to buy life insurance that you can get. And there's two types of term insurance. One is the cost of the insurance goes up every year.
The premium increases yearly.
The premium increases yearly, yeah. The other type is that the coverage and the premium stay the same.
For a specific period of time.
For a specific period of time. You could have 10-year level coverage or 20-year level coverage. Those are the two most common types of insurance. But the cost is so much cheaper than a policy that's has a cash piece to it. And so that's the way you should be buying your life insurance. The primary benefit to term insurance is you purchase the correct amount of coverage that your family needs in case the breadwinner happens to die. How do you buy term insurance? Basically, you just go on the internet. You don't need to call a company in. And to be perfectly honest with you, if you call an insurance agent, he's going to make very little money on the term insurance. He's really not going to want to talk to you too much. If you go on the internet and look up term insurance, you'll get all kinds of hits, different companies that'll go out and find out what the cost is for you, and you pick one, you fill it out. In some term insurance policies, you don't even have to do a health exam in order to qualify. One last thing is, why don't you get a second bank account?
Why?
When you only have one checking account and maybe one savings account, things tend to get all jumbled together. And there's a lot of good online banking organizations out there. They're covered by the FDIC and all the other letters that cover bank accounts and insurance and stuff like that. When you get your check, part of it should go to your brick-and-mortar bank, the one that's down there on the corner, and then another portion should go to this online bank. And maybe in that online bank, you have special things that you're saving money in there, like maybe you have an account for eating out, and you have your emergency fund there and your vacation fund there. So these are all ways to help you separate your accounts, spend your money much more wisely than just kind of jumbling it all together. And I think it's a good thing for you to look at.
Well, especially if you're using that second account in order to save for some things, like things that only come around quarterly or yearly.
Absolutely. Great way to go.
I hope you found those suggestions, those recommendations extremely helpful. And I know you're going to put a majority of them, if not all of them, into action today. Now, we posted all of the apps and the websites that we referenced. They're going to be part of our blog, and you'll find the blog at compasscatholic.org and look for 5 ways to give yourself a raise. Again, the website is compasscatholic.org. And before we leave you today, we have several emails that came in this week asking for advice from John and Evelyn. So let's get to the first one. John and Evelyn, we have no debt but our home mortgage. Unfortunately, my husband lost his job in March of last year, and we started a small business but have yet to see a profit. So all of our emergency fund has been used into the business. I do have a whole life insurance policy with a cash value of about $12,000. Would it make sense to cash out the whole life policy and put that into an emergency fund? We are getting along fine on my salary.
Well, we can sympathize with you. We've been there. It might make sense for you to check out to see if you can get less expensive term life insurance to replace the coverage on your existing life insurance. That depends on your age and those kinds of things and how much insurance you need. But that's a possibility, and if that is a possibility and you do that, then you can take the cash value from your life insurance and put that towards savings or an emergency fund. In all cases, you should make sure that the business pays for itself. We were there, we did that, and what happens is that business can become a huge drain on the rest of your finances.
And you say that you're getting along fine on the one salary, so I would encourage you to try to put that money from the cash value into a long-term savings and try to build up your emergency fund from your current salary.
And possibly you could even pay off your home mortgage, you know, depending on how much mortgage you've got, what that amount is.
Here's an interesting one. I help in our youth ministry at church. I often buy things for classes and events out of my own pocket. Because I've been spending my own money, I've not been putting any money into the collection basket. What's your thoughts?
I think it would be better to separate the two items. Contributing to the offertory is part of your participation at Mass. And I would suggest that you make your contribution at Mass and then submit your receipts for money that you're spending for supplies for the youth group to the parish office for reimbursement.
Because that'll help the parish office establish a budget for the youth group. If you're not there, they'll know how much was spent on it. Otherwise, they have no idea.
Absolutely.
For John and Evelyn Bean, I want to thank you so much for listening. And remember, each and every Wednesday morning, bright and early, we upload a brand new podcast for you. Simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down on the homepage, click on the button that says podcast. Not only will you find a brand new one, but you'll also find the archives of all the radio shows that we have done. This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we're from Compass Catholic Ministries.